Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Lambray, and I'm joined, as always, by my brother on the west side of Los Angeles, California. What's going on, Nando?
It's been forever, dude. I miss you.
Yeah, same.
You know, the people are clamoring for us to come back. It's mostly my fault. People. I apologize. So
it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Last time I saw Nando, we were watching Heat. At the, what's that shit called? The New Beverly.
Cinema. Yeah, Tarantino's theater.
He curates the movies. The dude that was moderating the event said this, that it was his personal print of Heat, which I thought was pretty fucking cool. That we were watching Quentin Tarantino's personal print of Heat. Just an incredible experience, like watching that in the movie theater. That fucking bank robbery scene.
Dude,
bro,
it's so sick.
That experience is crazy.
Yeah, just the loudness of the gunshots and
nuts.
I just like De Niro and Pacino going at it, like just going full ham.
So good.
Pacino just on one, dude. Like he was just on one.
She's got a great ass.
So good. So good, man.
And your head is up in it. All right. Anyway, man, we wanted to get into a couple of things because same old stuff in the news, obviously. Still a lot of war, death, and suffering happening in the Middle East.
Yeah.
The situation in Ukraine, like, I guess the Americans and the West thought that Ukraine was going to be this little engine that could defeat the Russians. It seems to not be happening. They're not on the precipice of a victory over there. So there's that. South Carolina primary is happening in the Republican primary contest. Nikki Haley's about to get waxed in her home state, which is kind of nuts. But such is life. And yeah, man, what I really wanted to talk to you about, Nando, because I don't know if you've noticed this shit, man, but like some pretty prominent libs are publicly hitting the panic button on the Biden situation. Jon Stewart, in his comeback, basically said, yo, Biden looks diminished. He looks old. This guy does not seem ready to take on the task of a whole ass presidential campaign. David Axelrod been killing this guy for like a year now. We know he was the architect of Obama's campaign, his chief of staff or whatever he was over there. a big Democrat
and a really smart political mind. Axelrod. Yes. Like he's a lib, you know, but he's better terrible than most politics. And he really is. And he's really sharp. Yeah.
Yes. He understands the game. He plays to win. And he's looking at the board and he's like, yo, this guy's not a winner. This is not a winning proposition. Like this guy is just vastly diminished from what he was in 2020. It's just true. Like just like, so Ezra Klein, he put out like an emergency podcast, another big Democrat, like the type of guy we're talking about. Like this guy was like the public mouthpiece of Obamacare type of shit.
Ezra Klein is like, probably the most influential liberal commentator.
Period. Okay. He's not on board with this shit. Ezra Klein is now going against the Democratic Party orthodoxy as far as the presidential race. Nate Silver is like, and Nate Silver is not even the type of cat. He fancies himself as somebody who's kind of calling balls and strikes. He's not really wading into the whatever, but like obviously he's just like, yo. These measurables right now are fucking horrible. And the idea that you just watch it and let it happen is crazy. And I just think it's wild that so many people are willing to publicly go against what the Democrats are trying to do with Biden right now. I mean, like, that has to mean something, Nando.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, they're panicking. I mean, they're panicking and rightly so. Because Biden is in fucking deep shit. I mean, his poll numbers are atrocious. Biden is losing Hispanic voters to a Republican. I mean, you can't win if that happens. Like, it's just not.
That's insane.
Hispanic voters are the largest ethnic minority in the United States by far. And it's the Democrats always win, like, handily. I think before this, The closest a Republican got was when George W. Bush got 40% of the Hispanic vote in 2004 in his reelection campaign because he ran on immigration reform. He ran on a comprehensive immigration reform that was actually quite, you know, sympathetic to the undocumented and things like that. He got 40% of the Hispanic vote. And like, you know, Obama's like racking up, you know, 80%, it's like, it's just, if you lose the Hispanic vote, you lose the White House. If you're a Democrat, you can't, there's no path to victory, you know, especially in key states like Arizona, you know, across the American, New Mexico, things like that. But even like there's Hispanics everywhere in America. That's like, you know, it's, so that's a huge problem for him.
Thanks. Thanks, Spain.
Exactly. He's also bleeding support amongst young voters, mostly because of Gaza.
Of course.
Like he's bleeding support amongst the young, in you know, under 35 voters. Like, you know, again, just key part of the coalition for any Democrat to have a prayer at the White House. He's obviously in trouble with Arab American voters, which is not a huge ethnic minority, but are
in key states. They are
In the states like Michigan, which is a huge swing state, there is a pretty large Arab American population there, and he's getting fucking waxed, obviously, because of Gaza, and so like the issues are obviously the war in Gaza is killing him because he comes off as weak, you know, and his age, it just looks really bad, dude. Like today, did you see this today? He confused Navalny's wife, his name, you know, like he met with Navalny's widow. Navalny is the Russian dissident who died in a Russian prison, you know. Mm-hmm. Her name is Yulia, and he kept on calling her Yolanda.
He's cooked. He's cooked.
He's cooked.
I was to get back to Ezra Klein, he put out an emergency podcast. I'm subscribed to his shit. I try to listen when he has interesting people on. And he basically put out an emergency pod about why the Democrats should just nominate somebody at the convention. Yeah. And he played clips. He said, yo, I'm going to play you guys clips from his rallies from 2020. He was not this. He just wasn't this diminished in Twitter. This is a different guy. Like, we need to stop ignoring this fact. And then he, you know, juxtaposed it against some more recent Biden clips, and it's fucking horrible. And it's just such a lack of vision. And here's another thing, too, that I'll say. It's not that voters are rejecting the Democrats out hand, right? Like, they keep winning these special elections and whatever. Like, it's not the Democrats that voters have soured on. So I say that to say the powers that you could be like, the powers that be in a if it was about the Democrats, would be like, yo, all of us are getting killed. There's no reason to not go with the incumbent, yada, 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 right? That would be the talking point that they would use. That's not the case. It's isolated to Joe fucking Biden. It's obvious that this guy is bad. People have completely soured on him. And again, I don't know why they think voters are just so stupid. I don't get it. Like, even if you want to say people are low information, we know the rules of engagement. This is why I don't feel bad for them either. They know what the rules of engagement are. It's essentially a beauty contest. It's essentially a popularity contest. It's essentially a charm off, if you will. You have to go on a charm offensive. You have to get people riled up to rally behind your cause. And your candidate has to be the face of that. He has to be the one selling that case. And if you have a guy who's unattractive because he can barely fucking talk and he's so clearly diminished, then you're not doing the game right. We know the rules. Like you know, I was using the example of when Richard Nixon got his ass kicked by John F. Kennedy, right? And before TV played this big role in presidential politics, like, it didn't matter that he wasn't as good looking, as well spoken, blah, 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 blah. He had all of these credentials. He was obviously more qualified. And he thought that would carry the day. But John F. Kennedy, on a debate on TV, just wiped the floor with him and was just hot. You know, Americans wanted to fuck him. You know, and so that vastly helped him, right? And you could, and Richard Nixon was like, yo, I didn't know these were the fucking rules, right? You could say that, but like, the Democratic Party can't say they don't know what the rules are. They don't know what it's like. They know, and yet they're still going with this. What's your best guess as to why nobody can push Biden out?
Well, there's the Democrats are extremely subservient, you know, to the party structures and the party power. They don't have a culture of internal challenging, you know, the power structure. That they really don't like that. They've stamped that out. I mean, they if you think about, you know, how viciously they attack people like, you know, Ilhan Omar or AOC whenever they step out of line a little bit. You know, I mean, they snap into line immediately.
Like, there's no Matt Gaetz in the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
Right? Like, how Matt Gaetz is always getting under some Republican skin. That does not exist on the Democratic Party side.
No. Because even the squad, which the Democratic Party treats like they were, like, you know, essentially lepers, kind of internal terrorists or something, like, are pretty subservient, you know, really, at the end of the day. So there isn't a culture of internal debate within the Democratic Party. There's also a big problem the Democratic Party has is that there isn't anyone with any sort of popular legitimacy to mount a counter argument. Like, in the biggest example I mean, I don't want to say recent history because it was 45 years ago at this point, but when Jimmy Carter was president and he started instituting neoliberal reforms and moving to the right and, doing all that good stuff, there was a guy named Ted Kennedy who was a senator who had a huge...
He was a lion of the Senate.
Lion of the Senate. He was a Kennedy, and he had the stones and the popular legitimacy and to challenge him in a primary as a sitting president. Like, no one in the Democratic Party has that right now. Like, no kind of middle tier person. Like, the closest is probably someone like a Gavin Newsom, governor of California. You know, but he's not going to, like, you know, the
not
the,
in
the
a,
party apparatus.
Not in an overt way, he's not doing it. He remember he was doing apparatus.
Yeah, in a way, he was
in his
was
little kind of sneaky cute
positioning
way.
Himself. Yeah, he was positioning himself like if something happened to Biden, because Biden could drop dead tomorrow.
Yes,
like would you be that shocked? Easily. Like he could literally just fucking die. You know, like he could just go to sleep and never wake up. Like that could happen. It's impossible to think that. It would be ridiculous to think that's impossible. It's hard to imagine like a president dying because it hasn't happened in our lifetime.
It's never happened.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, not our lifetime, but like just dying, right? Not like what you would call John F. Kennedy, who didn't just die. He, got killed by the CIA.
And the fucking Cubans. Yeah.
Babe, imagine. I'm working. All right. Sorry about that. Yeah, go ahead. That's all good.
So yeah, but that could happen, and so I think Newsom was just kind of banking on if that were to happen, that he wanted to position himself as that he could be like the guy waiting in the wings, in case they didn't trust Kamala, because like they clearly don't trust her. I mean,
she's a disaster.
It's comical. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there just isn't that. And so like even someone like a Newsom, who's clearly extremely ambitious, always has been, he's not going to do anything to really rock the boat, because these party structures for fundraising are so nationalized, and they're so like, it's just like a giant organization at this point. It used to be like a Ted Kennedy, he kind of had his own source of power, like his own voters in Massachusetts. He didn't really need the party for anything,
Right.
And now that's kind of different. So I think that's the big reason why.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a single, nobody even makes themselves into a thing, by the way. Right. I think of somebody like Newt Gingrich, who like went out of his way to make himself into a national figure. There are no Democrats who do that. Not in any meaningful way. They what's his freaking name? Oh my God. Why am I drawing a blank on this dude's name? The dude from California. Fuck. He was like the head of the resistance, when Trump got elected.
Oh, after Schiff?
Yes. Russiagate guy. Yes. Adam Schiff. When Trump gets elected, he's like making himself at the forefront of the resistance and all of that shit, right? And so, he's got a little national recognition, or he had it, because especially when you consider how much oxygen that shit got with cable news types, like this dude was on TV all the fucking time, but he was doing it in service of this bullshit Russiagate. He wasn't doing it in service of some cause or some constituency that he represented. He was just doing the Russiagate dumb shit. Right. Like now try to imagine a Democrat who made themselves into a national figure by championing something that a bunch of Democrats cared about. He made himself the face of, student loan debt or something. Not to say that a bunch of Democrats, but, just something. There's nobody doing this. There is nobody within the party apparatus doing this. And so, look. I don't want Joe Biden to die. But if he did drop dead tomorrow, like they would have to run a really rushed primary process. And I think that would be great.
They wouldn't. I don't think they would.
They would just nominate somebody at the convention, or you think they would just run Kamala?
Run Kamala. They can't organize a primary. Like it's too close. Like, I mean, the Iowa caucus already happened. Putting that all together, like,
can't do anything without Iowa.
that's why Ezra Klein isn't suggesting a primary. He's suggesting nominating just at the convention, because it's kind of late. And at the convention, like, I mean, not nominating the vice president would be kind of hilarious, but so anything could happen. But the one of the things I was thinking about is that one of the main reasons why Obama beat Hillary in 2007 in the Democratic primary was because he didn't vote for the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. It's unclear whether he supported it or not, because
it was a differentiating factor.
Huge, because Hillary was at the forefront of selling Iraq to the liberals.
And she refused to walk it back.
I know. She was just like, well, I just think Saddam Hussein was a really bad guy. Obama was clean in that sense. And I think that running someone like a Newsom or whatever, you know, that I like Gavin Newsom, I'm just saying, like, someone kind of like him, a governor or whatever, you know, someone who isn't stained by the Gaza thing, you know, would help him a lot with, like, young voters and Arab American voters, like, could come back to the Democrats if that were the case. Like, it's just hard to, it's hard for them to vote for Biden when they see the atrocities every single day on social media. And the American president's like, yeah, we got to keep doing that. You know?
Yeah.
Like that, I can't, I don't think, I think that that's, it's hard to, like, I think that that's a huge factor in Biden's collapsing poll numbers. Cause, like, you know, it really has happened in the last 3 months.
And you know, what's funny. I'm reading about Nikki Haley's, you know, she's making her case to the New Hampshire, blah, 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 man. And I'm like, you know, what's funny. I think the only reason Biden even has a chance is cause he's going up against Trump. I think if the Republicans ran like a fake moderate conservative like Nikki Haley, all of these thirsty ass suburban reactionary ass Democratic Party people, Johnny come latelys, would gladly vote for Nikki Haley. Gladly, oh, yeah. In a second over Joe Biden. They would lock people would in love it. Like this. If the Republicans had the stones to run that shit. I mean, I shouldn't say the stones. You know, so funny too. And I know I'm all over the place with this, but like hearing the Dems panic and, oh, you know, democracy is under threat and not the Dems, the Libs, democracy is under threat and Trump. And I'm like, yo, you know what's so funny about the Trump panic is like, this is actually democracy at work. This guy has a legitimate popular, he's got legit popularity. Actual American citizens want to vote for him and see him be the leader of this country. That's democracy. It's democracy you don't like, but that's democracy, bro. He's in a primary
and
right
they're
now.
Trying to remove
he's
him.
Kicking everybody's ass. Him.
Well, and they're trying to remove him from the ballots. I mean,
undemocratically.
Because like, they're afraid. Yeah, because they're afraid of democracy. You know, like that's.
It's hilarious that's, when they make that case.
Yeah. No, I mean, and listen, the other factor that I was thinking about a lot, you know, outside of the stain of Gaza on Biden, to a lot of Democratic voters, is that if you nominate a generic Democrat, it's pretty obvious to me that the issue of Roe v. Wade would really be the decisive factor in winning it for them. You know, Biden's kind of so unpopular that I think it's overwhelming that issue. But if like someone could just kind of, you know, some generic Democrat that wasn't, you know, that wasn't offensive in any way, didn't have any particularly strong, like the fundamentals of the electorate are with the Democrats. You know, we saw that in 2020, in the midterms, in the midterms of 2022, you know, we saw that the Republican wave that we expected was blunted mostly by the issue of abortion, you know, and that Democrats just kind of won more than it was expected to because of that. And I think that that's pretty obvious. And I think Biden is so deeply unpopular that it's overwhelming that issue. But if you got someone in that wasn't unpopular, wasn't necessarily popular either, but, you know, people that issue would come back to the forefront and it would really hurt Trump.
Yeah, and also stop with the. I'm tired of every single day. Well, actually, the economy is doing fucking fantastic, and Biden needs to run up the economy. And blah, blah, blah. It's like, bro, GDP is not a measure of how everyday Americans are doing. The stock market is not a measure of it. Yes, there's been some wage
gains. You know what it
is?
Housing costs.
Yes. Yeah. And that shit is expensive as hell. It's expensive as hell. And there's not a single Democrat on the planet speaking to those problems right now. Especially not no damn Joe Biden, right? The GDP, gross domestic product, is a stat that pertains to the people who own our economy. Not us who participate in it. It's not a measure of our success in the economy, guys. It's for the people who actually own it. So, like, when all of these fucking idiots get up there and say, well, Joe Biden isn't effectively explaining to Americans that they're doing fantastic right now. It's like, it's so condescending, so stupid, so fucking lib. It's just perfect. Last thing I wanted to get you out of here, Nando.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello, listener.
I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
yeah, whatever. Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to get you out of here on... Tucker, and I talked about this on Ethan's podcast, so forgive me if any of you guys heard Ethan's and are listening to this, but Tucker Carlson went to Russia to do an interview with Vlad Putin, which I thought was pretty fucking dope, honestly. I think it's important. Not that I like Vladimir Putin. I'm not a fan of his, although he came off kind of impressive. I'm just saying, like, it's important for Americans to know who this guy is, the views that he espouses, like what his ideology is, that he's not some fucking cartoon character. He's not like Lex Luthor, y'all. Like even if you disagree with the basis of the art, like if you disagree with the argument he's making, it's not a completely insane and ridiculous argument. So whatever, get that out the way. But Tucker Carlson's like on the trains in Russia, like, oh, these are pretty nice trains and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's like kind of participating in Russian propaganda, which is just fucking hilarious to me. But man, Vlad Putin sat down, man. You want to talk about making somebody look like a mental midget?
Yeah.
Putin, man, he's a guy, Nando. Like a guy, a legitimate guy, dude.
I mean, did anyone think Vladimir Putin? I mean, anyone who thought Vladimir Putin was some dummy is you know, sadly mistaken.
You out
don't,
to lunch?
You don't do. you know, he was an intelligence agent. Like, he was he came up through the KGB and then the FSB. Like, he's not fucking,
Bro, Tucker, Bro, like, you are not on my level at all. And I just thought, like, his sort of giving Tucker Carlson a history lesson and just like making him understand his side of it, and ultimately being like, yo, I'd love to come up with a peace deal. I'd love to. Is there a single, have you heard one single American in power say anything about peace in Ukraine?
No.
Like, do they even talk about it as a goal or an objective to stop this shit? No. Or should we just keep writing checks to Lockheed Martin?
Yeah, no. No, I mean, listen, Vladimir Putin's obviously like a very bad man, but he's no dummy. For sure. And I just think that one of the benefits of the Tucker interview was there's this problem that happens a lot in American media and American culture, whereas that you don't really ever hear from the official enemies. And so then it becomes easy for them to become cartoon villains, then becomes easy for them to, for the only justification is like full on violence, like, because you can't deal with these people. Right. And I mean, this is true of North Korea. This is true of Venezuela. This is true of, you know, insert enemy regime here. You know what I mean?
Remember when we were at dinner, Nando, and you were like, they were like, Nando, tell them about this crazy thought that you have. And you were like, yeah, I think every nation should have a nuke. And people are like, what the fuck? Are you crazy? And I'm like, honestly, I agree with that. It's not just that me and Nando agree on it. It's just like, bro, like, first of all, a bunch of our enemies have nukes. And guess who's the only person that's ever used them?
Yeah, the United States. Yeah.
It's just like this idea that
it's a semi-trollish argument, but because obviously, like, you know, in my heart of hearts, I would love like total denuclearization.
Nobody to have nukes, of course. Yeah,
exactly. But if they're going to be there, you know, the imbalance of countries with nukes and countries without nukes is a huge invitation towards violence. And, you know, the fact that North Korea has a nuke means that North Korea will never be invaded, you know.
Period.
Whereas, you know, Gaddafi willingly gave away his nuclear program in a deal with the United Nations, and then he was killed by the United States.
I just think it speaks to this idea that there are these different kinds of human beings in other countries who would behave so much more diabolically,
psychotically,
and less rational than we do here in the United States. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, there are people who can read a situation and make sound decisions just like we claim to be able to do it. Like, that's why I think it's important for Vladimir Putin to, quote unquote, have a platform to, like, be like, yo, here's my, and Tucker Carlson was going after him, kind of, was like, yo, what the fuck? Like, why'd you invade this country? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, like, he was semi-combative. He's just not on the level of a Vlad Putin. So it's just like, yeah, like, he clearly knows nothing about Russian history. Like, he clearly knows nothing about the sort of mindset of a Russian person and the people of that region and their cult. Like, he clearly has no understanding of that. So he couldn't effectively, you know, counterpunch what Putin was throwing at him. Yeah. But man, yo, watching that shit, I'm like, yo, Putin is a fucking boss.
Well, I mean, he's got command. He's got a certain, comparing him to Biden is wild, right? Because, like, you know, Biden can't, you know, get through a sentence, and Putin has like total command of the situation. Like, that's the image that he projected in that interview. I encourage everyone to check out the latest episode of Radio War Nerd podcast, which is one of the best podcasts in the history of mankind. Mark Ames and John Dolan.
I'm about to get on there.
You should get on it. It's fucking great. Their latest episode on Navalny kind of goes through the whole recent history of Russia.
Radio War Nerd
and Navalny. The Radio War Nerd. Yeah, it's incredible. And you know, I mean, it's just you when you listen to something like that. I mean, Mark Ames lived in Russia. He ran a magazine called The Exile in Russia. Like he speaks Russian perfectly. So he's an American, but he understands Russia and knows Russia well. Hearing him talk about Russia and Russian politics and Russian history, it's just like you realize the information that you get here in the West about Russia is completely filtered through what I would call this kind of official enemy lens, in which there's a complete and willful misunderstanding of basically everything, and this kind of cartoonish depiction of the official enemies as these kind of bloodthirsty, crazy people. And like, you know, there are violent people in Russia. Putin's a very bad man, but like, I mean, I don't know. The United States does all kinds of violent shit that to the outside world looks heinous, and to us, we've just kind of absorbed it. So,
I will say this, and over the years, my view of our quote unquote enemies, which is China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, those are basically the four bads.
And Venezuela.
And Venezuela and Cuba, quite hilariously. This is just hilarious. That's just a ridiculous thing to say. Like Venezuela.
Sometimes Nicaragua is one of them too. Sometimes.
Yeah. I've over the years come to see those countries more favorably than I previously did. Just understanding it's not just what we do abroad, but also the people who we call our best friends, meaning the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Israelis.
Yeah.
Like, why are they so much better than Russia and China?
Yeah, they're not good.
And
yeah.
Iran. Show me the proof that they're way better than them.
Yeah. I lived in China, so I feel a certain authority to speak about, you know, how
CCP,
China depicted.
CCP spokesperson over here, folks.
Yeah, this is my CCP propaganda. But no, I mean, just beyond that, I think that there's a image of China in the West as these kind of automaton, obedient, you know, massive people that are just kind of in the, you know, whatever Xi Jinping says, like that goes.
Yeah, they're under his spell, blah, blah, blah.
And it's just like, it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, it couldn't be further from the truth. Like, these are pretty anarchic people. Like, they don't like to follow rules. I mean, I don't know. It's a completely opposite depiction. Like, I see it all the time. I'm like, you guys have no idea. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, this is just not my experience with Chinese people at all. Like, it's completely backwards. So, I mean, if you extrapolate that to every single other country, which I'm sure it's true, you get a picture of how distorted things are for us.
Yeah, and obviously we don't support the regime in Iran or whatever, except for the fact that they whooped America's ass. I mean, I support that. They got the damn Yanks off of their freaking necks somehow, miraculously, and they haven't they haven't gotten over that shit since. They're still pissed about the revolution.
They're still like, pissed. They're still mad
they're
about it.
Still pissed about it. Still. Yeah. Right. Same with Cuba. Like, you know, just the idea is like, wait a second. This used to be our shit. We used to own this. What the fuck? You don't get to have your own country. Anyway, I encourage people who haven't seen it yet to go check out the Tucker Carlson interview because it's so fucking hilarious. Just how he just gets bodied. He just gets smoked by Vlad Putin. Yeah. And it's the first time I've ever watched Putin speak. I've never watched an interview of his before.
Yeah.
You gotta assume any other interview, he's probably doing, you know, Russian media, which we know is just propaganda for the most part. Yeah, so whatever. Check that shit out. Make sure you become a Patreon. We're doing new OG pods with the gang. Me, Tom Haberstroh, Amin, Trey, motherfucking Zach Harper. That's why you see the big Zaz there. We're doing the Zaz show with me and Zach every single Wednesday, talking NBA on there. So doing Patreon exclusives on that. So make sure you guys lock into the Patreon, patreon.com/countthedings. Shouts to my man John Gervais, keeping the trains running on time, man. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.